So you want to start a business. You might think you need a team of people and fancy tech skills, but you don't. You just need GoDaddy Aero. I'm Walton Goggins, and as an actor, I'm an expert in looking like I know what I'm doing, even when I don't. And I like the sound of starting my own business, Walton Goggins Goggle Glasses. But I'm an actor. I don't know what I'm doing. I needed help. GoDaddy Aero uses AI to create everything you need to grow a business. It'll make you a unique logo. It'll create a custom website. It'll write social posts for you and even set you up with a social media calendar. I didn't even realize I needed a social media calendar. GoDaddy Aero will take your idea that sounds good and make a business that looks like you know what you're doing. GoDaddy Aero can get your business up and running in minutes. You know what that sounds like? It sounds like a plan. Get started at GoDaddy.com/Aero. That's GoDaddy.com/AIRO.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
This program is paid for by the Labor and Energy Alliance. All opinions or statements expressed on the program are solely those of Labor and Energy Alliance or their guests and do not reflect the opinions of WPHT or Odyssey. Today's program has been pre-recorded.
The Labor and Energy Alliance would like to thank the following organizations for your generosity and support. Together, we are educating listeners and changing the narrative, one broadcast at a time. The American Fuel and Petrochemical Manufacturers, PBF Energy, Monroe Energy, Steamfitters Local 420, EQT Corporation, Marcellus Shale Coalition, the Eastern Atlantic States Regional Council of Carpenters, United Steelworkers, National Mining Association, and the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers.
Consider a career with the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers. As a Boilermaker apprentice, you'll earn while you learn. We offer excellent wages and benefits. And as part of our no-cost, hands-on apprenticeship program, you'll learn from the best in state-of-the-art training centers and on the job. Become a union Boilermaker and get on your way to a great career.
Visit Boilermakers.org or call 844-IBB-WELD.
And guess where this additional billion gallons of biofuel is going to come from? It's going to come from abroad. That's not an American First energy policy. We're in this together. Labor's in this. Building trades are in this. Refiners are in this. American consumers need us to do this too.
Now across the Jacob Media Network, welcome to the Labor and Energy Show special, exclusively presented by the PBF Energy Paulsboro Refinery and the PBF Delaware City Refinery, in collaboration with the labor unions that build our communities.
If you fix this RINs issue, you're looking at a reduction of 25 to 30 cents a gallon.
This is the Labor and Energy Show, bringing labor leaders, national experts, and political influencers together to educate you about fancy terms like RINs and RGGI, while explaining the truth about energy independence. Welcome to the Labor and Energy Show with J-Doc and Krause.
And welcome in, everyone, to another edition of the Labor and Energy Show with J-Doc and Krause across the Jacob Media Network. Good show lined up today, J-Doc. I think if my memory is accurate, Robert Bryce, who's going to be with us for the full hour today, two good segments with you and Robert. We had a great broadcast with Robert previously on the Labor and Energy Show.
Yeah, so we've had Robert. We've been the good fortune of having Robert Bryce on several times, and so he's an acclaimed author, journalist, producer, an energy expert who spent decades in the space, major advocate in nuclear. Okay, and so Today's show, Joe, we're going to be talking about, you're going to hear three terms a lot. You're going to be hearing the AI and data centers, small modular reactors, and we're going to be talking about Robert's new mini documentary, Shrinking Fission, The Race to Build Small Modular Reactors. So this is going to be a great show. I think, so Robert, when we first started having him on the show several years ago, if you'll recall, those were the days where I, and don't get me wrong, I got up awful early this morning and went to bed early last night and been working on, you know, the interview. But if you recall, Robert, you know, every time I used to have Robert on, I'd be up all night studying. Now, I've learned a lot listening to Robert, so I don't have to stay up all night. I look morning fresh, as you can see. But having said that, definitely can't wait to talk to Robert. Lots of things going on. Couldn't be more excited.
And I will check the box with an exclamation point, J-Doc. You are a living example of why this show exists. You have become educated on the topics of discussion over the tenure of the Labor and Energy Show, which is exactly what we want our listening audience to do.
Well, the funny thing is, so it is an area that is, you know, in some ways complicated. Okay, not even some ways. And you and I have taken the adage that our job is to, in a sense, translate, okay, you know, get the opportunity to meet the experts and the greatest minds in labor and energy, and, you know, be able to, you know, get that message and deliver it, translate it to, you know, obviously our listeners. And so it's a unique opportunity for us. And what's important about it is, these issues are affecting our everyday lives. Okay, so what they used to say, ignorance is no excuse. Okay, especially in the law, well, in energy as well, because a lot of times people don't find out in layman's terms until it's too late.
Let's get started. It's the Labor and Energy Show with J-Doc and Krause, back in 30. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Labor and Energy Show, proudly presented by PBF Energy, also EQT Corporation, American Fuel and Petrochemical Manufacturers, and Monroe Energy.
This program is paid for by the Labor and Energy Alliance. Today's program has been pre-recorded. Portions of tonight's Labor and Energy Special are presented by PBF Energy and supported by members of the labor union community, a collaborative to educate the public and change the narrative.
Hi, welcome back to the Labor and Energy Show on the Jacob Media Network. We've got an awesome guest, Robert Bryce, acclaimed author, film producer, and journalist. How are you, sir?
Hey, how you doing, J-Doc? Long time no talk to you.
Yeah, I don't know if you heard, you know, Krause and I talking, but I didn't have to study all night last night. Okay? and you know, we're going to be talking about some topics that nobody's talking about, like AI and data centers.
Yeah, this is, nobody's even hearing anything about. It's very obscure these days. Yeah,
there are third graders, Robert, this is obviously they're talking about it in their classrooms. And the funny thing is, they're probably using it already, but this is on obviously a different level. And we just had, and we're going to be talking, like I said in the opening, obviously we're going to be talking about AI and the data centers, and of course, small modular reactors, okay? And of course, your new mini documentary that tackles that. And so it really, really interesting, game-changing stuff, okay? And so not sure if you had heard about this, but we had a big summit here in July. Donald Trump, Senator McCormick, a Republican, a Republican senator in Pennsylvania, Governor Josh Shapiro spearheaded it, okay? And a ton of labor in the room, ton of energy, and all about AI data centers, and all about jobs, and obviously the technology and all those things. And an air of optimism. We had the opportunity of doing a show, okay, with Rob Baer, our president of our PA Building and Construction Trades, Jim Welty, president of Marcellus Shale Coalition, Jimmy Snell, the Steam Fitters Union, and John Bain, who was with EQT Corporation, and we talked about Stephanie Catarino, also of the API, talking about the summit at Carnegie Mellon, and an air of optimism, a very unique air of optimism, bipartisan, lots going on. I'll tell you, sitting where I'm sitting right now, after reporting on all this insanity over the last several years of plants getting shut down and all these crazy things, you would almost think, okay, AI is going to be the catalyst to stopping this insanity. But that is not, we just can't sit down on our laurels and think it's just going to happen, because the climate out there, for lack of a better term, is nothing would surprise me. And obviously AI and our data centers and all those things, we need to take advantage of those situations, fight so they don't screw them up.
Sure.
So, having said that, I'd like to kind of jump right into it. Okay. We're going to do it in kind of two segments, because I want to talk about the AI data centers. I want to talk about a lot of the things that are going on. Then I want to get into the mini documentary, and we could cover everything at once. But I'd like to do it in somewhat of an order, and that will give us the opportunity to kind of understand the importance of the mini documentary. And so
sure,
let's start with obviously AI, artificial intelligence. We all know the AI platforms like ChatGPT, Gemini, Copilot use far more computing power, okay? And therefore far more electricity than anything before us, okay? From an energy perspective, what will America need to stay competitive as AI grows? Is our grid and our energy system ready to handle this surge in demand?
Well, this is the key question, JDoc. And first, again, great to be back with you. But what we've seen, just a little quick background, is that, and this has been, of course, if any, a lot of your listeners are in the trades, they know this, that power demand in the U.S. has been relatively flat now for the last two decades, right? We haven't been growing our electricity use in the U.S. in to any significant degree, less than 1% per year for about the last 20 years. So while we've been closing coal plants and some gas plants, we've also been closing a few nuclear plants and building a lot of wind and solar. But the wind and solar isn't going to be enough. You can't run these data centers on intermittent weather-dependent generation. So what we have seen, and it's really been just in the last 12 months, has been this sea change in thinking about the grid, and particularly in among the biggest of the big tech players, Meta, Google, Microsoft, Amazon, saying we have to build a lot of new generation. We have to do it right now. All right. So Amazon is there in your home state going to take a lot of the power from the Susquehanna nuclear plant. Microsoft has agreed to a deal to restart Three Mile Island. And then Google, they're all investing in small modular reactors, which we'll talk about later. But the punchline here is that one of the best analyses, or reliable numbers I've seen, is that by 2030, AI in the U.S. will need 50 gigawatts of power. Well, what's 50 gigawatts? You're in Pennsylvania, you're a PA guy. It's roughly equal to all the generation capacity of Pennsylvania, a state of 13 million people. So this is a very large number, and it's going to be almost all of it's going to be gas, because that's the only thing that's available that can scale to the level that the big tech companies need for AI. So it is a very interesting time. We're seeing a lot of inflation, and I want to talk about the labor and skilled labor issue on this, because this is one of the key pinch points in the entire build out, and something that's directly going to affect all of your union workers and non-union workers alike.
Well, it's interesting, because a lot of our labor leaders are they're already adjusting their apprentice programs for the new technology, and so the trained workforce is obviously that's our selling point with labor. But having said that, when you talk about AI and state policy, okay, energy prices, okay, AI means obviously more data centers. They have enormous amounts of power. Okay, Northern Virginia has seen massive data center growth, but not the big power price spikes that we've seen in New Jersey or Delaware.
Yeah.
All three of the states share the same PJM grid.
Right.
But only New Jersey and Delaware are in RGGI and have aggressive renewable mandates.
Right.
How much the state renewable mandates affect energy costs and competitiveness as data center demand rises?
Well, that's a key question. But if you don't mind, let me just backtrack a little bit, because what we saw, and you mentioned this earlier, the data center boom in Pennsylvania. And I think this is really important for a couple of reasons. One is that the Homer City coal plant is now going to be converted into a gas plant of 1,200 megawatts. It'll be one of the biggest gas plants in the U.S. And what's interesting about that is that that plant will be effectively built on top of the Marcellus, right? So rather than having to generate the power and move it to a long distance to a data center in, you know, where, you know, in Palo Alto, for instance, or somewhere where, no, they're going to build the data centers where the gas is. And this is really important because, and you know, it's the corollary would be what they would call a mine mouth power plant, where they would put a power plant at the mouth of the coal mine, right? So they don't have to move the coal very far, and they produce the power and then ship the power. So I think this is a really key development, and we see the same thing happening in Texas with a lot of data centers being developed out in West Texas near the Permian Basin, including the Stargate project in Abilene. Well, Abilene's just, you know, adjacent to the Permian, where there is, I don't know what the technical term is, but it's a poop ton, I think is the technical term, of gas available in the Permian. So the data center operators are going to build where the gas, close to the gas. And we're seeing some of the same things in Ohio. So they're building again atop the Marcellus. So this is key, but I just want to hit on this labor point before we talk about electricity prices, because what I've heard over and over, I was in a meeting that I spoke at a conference that Kiewit, the big EPC firm, held last couple of weeks in South Carolina. And I spoke about AI and power demand, gas demand, et cetera. And at the end of the presentation, and there were about 60 or 70 people in the room from some big utilities, from power plant, from independent power producers. I said, how many of you are facing problems with keeping skilled labor? And nearly every hand in the room went up. So that's one anecdote. Here's another. And two anecdotes make data. About a year ago, I was in Virginia talking to a group, and we talked about data centers. It was a conference put on by a business council in Virginia. And one of the utility executives there said, we don't need any more engineers. We've got plenty of engineers. What do we need? Welders, pipe fitters, steam fitters, electricians. So this is a theme that I think JDOC is really important for your listeners and for all the skilled trades is that we're at the end of the baby boom. And so this demand for labor across the construction sector now, because there's so much capacity being built, this is going to be one of the key constraints. And I think it's going to be very positive in terms of wage growth for skilled laborers, because they're in such high demand.
You know, it's interesting. That was a big part of our conversation that we had, okay, on the summit show that we just did a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And so it was refreshing that labor and that our building trades are prepping there. I mean, literally speaking, to get ahead of the game and understanding that the benefit of skilled labor, you talk about organized labor, you talk about apprentices that an unlimited workforce, okay, so that, and an unlimited train. So we got journeyman upgrading, okay, when you talk about that, a lot of the AI skills, and the same thing when it comes to our apprentices, okay?
Yeah.
You're talking about preparation when it comes to that. Also, so the vision that is being laid out is incredibly important. Also, when you talk about politically speaking, the lobbying and the connections with the politicians, so it's a really good situation in regards to, okay, organized labor is not only preparing educator-wise, but right now, the one of the most important things is that our political leaders have this vision, and they're not getting beat up by extremists that are going to drop the ball. I love the fact.
And I think, if I can interrupt, I think that support, that political support, is bipartisan, because what I think both parties are understanding is that AI and nuclear technology as well are national security issues. We can't let the Russians and the Chinese in particular, to dominate the AI business. But one other quick point, and that is that, and this was something that came with from the Kiewit conference a couple of weeks ago, is that kind of the consensus among the big EPC firms and the companies that are, you know, that are the suppliers, et cetera, is that they see a long runway for this, that this is, you know, does it smell a little like a bubble? Absolutely. Right. You know, that there's so much froth around AI and, you know, so much money. We're talking massive capital expenditures, hundreds of billions of dollars, that it definitely smells, look kind of feels like a bubble. But that bubble, from everything that I've been hearing, is not going to be 2 years. It's going to be five, maybe 10 years. So again, this is very positive. If you're a skilled tradesman and you have the technology, the skills that are needed in this workforce, particularly electricians, welders, et cetera, you're going to have a work for a long time to come.
Well, project labor agreements, okay? Project peace agreements, the ability for unions to go in and on big projects, okay, and guarantee no work stoppages. You know, there's a lot of factors that are involved, especially with these large projects, okay? But being able to sustain them and guarantee that we're going to have a long-term successful endeavor is so important. And
yeah,
we're obviously psyched about it. And when you hear all the big companies, by the way, that were at the summit, you mentioned them already. You talk about what's awesome about that. And I'm just a regular dude, you know, like I hear this stuff and I listen to a lot of the education that you're providing. And it's almost like a blanket, because we got into this, Robert, to educate the general public and our labor community. Okay. But when I say labor community, yes, our leaders are involved, but our rank and file members too. Okay. To kind of fill the gaps. When I hear about, you know, these huge companies and a lot of these same companies, if AI didn't exist, would be the ones pushing back on us to shut everything down. So it gives us an ally of epic proportions to be able to maintain, obviously, our traditional energy base and industries. Okay. And so it feels great. We had a labor and energy board meeting a couple weeks ago. And at some of these plants that you're talking about, of course, the environmentalists showed up, want to shut it down, and with no game plan.
Right.
And so is it true? And, you know, 'cause I asked this question a long time with the data centers. Okay. Unlike a lot of other forms of energy that can be transported and all that, we can't just build them overseas to service, you know, like areas in the United States. So, you know, in essence, we would, you know, like obviously solar was taken over, and a lot of our traditional energies, obviously critical minerals and a lot of those things mined overseas, somehow find a way to get a middleman and come over. We can't even get the permits anyway. But the point I'm making is this is not that simple. You just can't, you know, power data, you know, power what you need, AI overseas, put a big coax cable under the ocean and serve the United States.
Right. Yeah. No, we're not going to, you know, well, okay. Some of the chip manufacturing, NVIDIA manufactures their high-end chips in Taiwan. So, and that's an issue that I think is going to, you know, obviously be, is already front and center with deals with Intel and AMD, et cetera. But no, in general, you're right that we're not going to offshore AI because of the national security issues. And I was in a meeting in August with a high-ranking former high-ranking military official, and he was kind of talking about AI in an interesting way that I hadn't thought about. But what I inferred from what he was saying was that, in fact, big tech sees the importance of AI as a national security issue, and they're not necessarily taking orders from Washington, but because they have their own interests in making money, et cetera. But that it's very clear the connection between the federal government and big tech seeing AI as a national security issue. And so to your exact point, it's not going to be offshored, and that's good, you know. But the danger, I think, in some ways is that, you know, how much inflation is this going to cause across the supply chain? And that's the other part that I think is critical people to understand that, yes, we're going to see higher wages, which is great for the workers, right? And one EPC contractor I know, he said, we're paying union scale wages to non-union workers because we have to keep them. And so, but the other part of this is the inflation you're seeing in transformers, switchgear, breakers, all of the other kit that's needed to build out the infrastructure, and gas turbines, the wait time I heard from a guy at XL Energy in August, 6 to 7 years now. So, you know, there are a lot of moving parts here, but the availability of critical materials, critical inputs, critical commodities, that many of which are made overseas, but a lot of them being onshore, that's the other constraint here that's going to affect the timing of the build out, which I think is just important to keep in mind.
And so let's talk a little bit about, before we get into it, the whole second part of the show is going to be about the new mini documentary, but let's talk about grid reliability. Okay.
Sure.
And policy reevaluation. So PJM has warned that fossil fuel power retirements are outpacing new renewable capacity raising.
Yeah.
Serious reliability concerns. That's not new. We've known about that. Okay. But it's a problem. And so in many states, natural gas plants are nearly impossible to build because of net zero policies like New Jersey's Energy Master Plan and RGGI. Do you think this growing reliability gap will finally push policymakers to rethink these aggressive renewable mandates and recognize the need for more natural gas generation?
Well, I think it already is. There's just no doubt about it, J-Doc. You look, I do a lot of public speaking and I follow Google. Well, Google alone, their electricity demand doubled between 2020 and 2024. One company. Today, Google by itself is using as much electricity as New Mexico, a state of 2 million people, 2.1 million. So the scale of the demand is what is key here. And I mentioned EPRI's estimate of 50 gigawatts equal roughly to the output of Pennsylvania. These are just very large numbers. And so there's no other way to get there to power to provide the juice that AI needs, except with natural gas. And so now, thankfully, we're not in Germany, we're not in Britain, we're not in Australia, where the woolly-headed, you know, left and climate catastrophists are saying, oh, we can still do all this with renewables. No, there's been, I think, in the U.S. overall, and I do say this overall, a more sober approach from the left and the right, Republicans and Democrats. And it's interesting what you said there in PA, you've got a Democratic governor and you had a Republican senator, but they're looking at, they know the Marcellus is key to the state's future. And so they're not going to, you know, Josh Shapiro, you know, I think he has higher aspirations than just being governor of Pennsylvania, but they know they're getting the message and they know that to try and buck this trend is a losing proposition.
No question. We've got a couple minutes to break. I just want to ask one more question. And that is, what's happening when you talk about in Europe and in China, when it comes to AI growth and power generation? You know, are there lessons or warning signs the U.S. should pay attention to?
Sure. Well, it's funny, you know, because the Europeans and Britain in particular, they've been talking this game about AI, but it's all BS, J-Doc. They just cannot get out of their own way because they're so enthralled, in the stranglehold, really, of the climate activists who won't let them expand the grid to the scale that is needed. So Europe, when it comes to AI, is a non-factor. They're just not going to be players because they can't, because they put themselves into a stranglehold. China, whole different story. China is burning record amounts of coal. Here's a quick fact for you. China is now building over 200 gigawatts of new coal plants. By the time China finishes the 200 gigawatts of coal that are now under construction, just China's coal fleet, its coal fleet alone will be as large or larger than the entire U.S. grid, about 1.3, 1.4 terawatts. So, you know, China is not going to sit idly by. They're not only are they aggressively pursuing fission, they're aggressively pursuing fusion. They're building coal plants. They're expanding their gas production. China is not going to sit back and let the world's technology and next AI era be defined by the U.S. They are going to, China's going to look out for China, and they're going full bore ahead.
Okay, so they're in the Paris Accord, correct?
Oh, you cracked me up. All right. And Xi Jinping just the other day said, oh, we're going to lead the world on climate. And all these editorials were written, oh, you know, China is going to lead the world now and the U.S. is going to fall behind. I mean, come on. What a bunch of baloney. And yet, you know, they're building.
I can tell you this. The ironies are, you know, you and I are going to have a conversation after this show, you know, because I can tell you. The contradictions and the ridiculousness. Okay, I'll get into it later. Let's take a quick break.
Sure.
We're going to have more from the Labor and Energy Show and our guest Robert Bryce in just a minute.
First chartered in 1903, Steamfitters Local 420 has been constructing and installing mechanical systems throughout the Delaware Valley for over a century. United by excellence, this local is proud to have worked on projects such as the Sun Oil Refineries, Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, and the stadiums for all our Philly teams. From helmets to hard hats, Local 420 represents the history of Philadelphia. Steamfitters Local 420. Jim Snell, business manager.
Tom Lee Hackey has become part of our morning prayers.
I was a full-time nurse, just lifting up a patient.
A tractor trailer came up behind this, pushed us right through.
Right off the bat, you just felt comfortable. I felt somebody had my back.
He says, I'm going to do everything that I can do for you.
You guys are amazing. I love you.
Call Pond Lahaki Giordano, highly rated Philadelphia workers' compensation attorneys.
What's a Boilermaker? We're the skilled welders, riggers, and craftspeople who will help you grow your competitive edge. We step up when others step back, and we do the job right, on time, on budget, and safely. No drama, just results, every time. We're the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers, and everything we do begins with our bond. Let's get to work together. Visit bestintrade.com.
The Eastern Atlantic States Regional Council of Carpenters is proud to present skilled union workers, including the workers that build and maintain our energy infrastructure. The safest, best trained, and most productive carpenters in the country are on the job. Whether it's energy from nuclear, wind, coal, natural gas, or offshore wind, the EAS carpenters are ready to provide the construction need of an energy industry our families depend on. If you're interested in a job in construction, visit EASCarpenters.org or follow us on social at EAS Carpenters.
This program is paid for by the Labor and Energy Alliance. Today's program has been pre-recorded. Portions of tonight's Labor and Energy special are being supported by the members of the labor union community, including Steamfitters Local 420, Jim Snell, business manager, the Eastern Atlantic States Regional Council of Carpenters,
and the United Steelworkers.
Welcome back to the Labor and Energy Show on the Jacob Media Network. We have Robert Bryce as our guest. Always excited to have Robert on. Acclaimed author, film producer, journalist. Speaking of producer, okay, new mini documentary, Shrinking Fission, The Race to Building Small Modular Reactors. Okay, here's a funny question for us iron workers. I know you eat this for breakfast, but what is fission?
Sure. Well, fission is splitting atoms. Fusion is fusing atoms. So fission is the technology that was behind the atom bomb. It was the uncontrolled energy from the splitting of atoms that created the explosion that was obviously so devastating. But you can control that splitting the atom, that fission process in a nuclear reactor to create large amounts of heat. And when you can create large amounts of heat, you can create steam. You create steam, you can turn a turbine, you turn a turbine, you can create electricity. So simple to talk about, sometimes complicated to do. But yes, fission is what we've been using in all of our nuclear power plants all over the world, some 400 of them now for decades.
So just so you understand, Robert, that was a test. Okay.
Did I pass J-Doc? I hope I did.
Me and Krausty talk about fission and fusion and a lot of those things. I had a nightclub called Fusion, just so you know, we've been thinking about this a long time. So let's talk about the mini documentary. Okay. Fascinating,
sure.
Man. 7.5 minutes of really, really great stuff. And you know, you're so many questions when you think of, so your documentary opens up what President Eisenhower's 1953 speech about the peaceful power of the future. Okay. And how nuclear, you know, is if we can to put that together, what it would do. Why did you choose to begin there? Okay. And what does that historical vision mean in today's context?
Sure. Well, I was familiar with Eisenhower's Atoms for Peace speech, you know, for some time, but it was in the nuclear era. In we live in the nuclear age. We live in the age of electricity. It was a landmark speech, arguably the single most important speech on nuclear energy ever given. And I would add to that, that this summer when President Trump signed the four executive orders supporting nuclear power in the United States, those were the most important actions by a sitting U.S. president in with regard to nuclear energy since Eisenhower's 1953 Atoms for Peace speech. So these are, if I can use this word, epochal events, right, that are very clear markers in history of what the development and of nuclear power. So I started there because it's an evocative speech. I love that old black and white, you know, the images of him taking off his hat. That was one of the things I loved. Men don't wear hats like that anymore. I mean, you're wearing a baseball hat or, you know, a gimme cap. But he was wearing a fedora and he introduced himself to, I forgot who greeted him. I think it was Dag Hammarskjöld. And he took his hat off and sugar. I just thought, and that is an anachronism, right? And I was dealing with my, I know you deal with your daughter who works for the project.
Like that, you know, like that sets the stage right there where, you know, I got something to say.
Yeah.
And like you said, it was an epic, you know, it was an epic speech. Very impressive. I want to spitfire here, Robert. So,
sure.
So much to cover, but, so you said electricity is obviously now the world's most important form of energy, and it's yeah. exploding. How does that reality set the stage for the nuclear revival we're talking about?
Sure. Well, first, just a quick couple of things. I've been writing about thinking about electricity. You know, it's the subject of my last book, which came out in 2020, called A Question of Power, Electricity and the Wealth of Nations. Electricity is the world's most important and fastest growing form of energy, and it has been for a long time. And now it's becoming even more central to all of our society, right? The electric grid, as I say, is the mother network. It's the network upon which all of our critical systems in our society depend. But what we're seeing now is this massive growth in electricity demand, and because of AI, because of other countries, the developing world, China, India, Bangladesh, Pakistan, Indonesia, Vietnam, all of these countries, many of them in South Asia, are wanting to increase their standards of living. And so what are they doing? They're burning coal, they're burning gas, they're looking at nuclear. So this nuclear comeback that we're seeing in the U.S. is a critical part of this. If we're going to be able to provide the staggering amounts of power that are needed for AI, if we're going to be able to do this in a way that is, and I don't use this word very often because it's so hackneyed, where if in a sustainable way, and that is with provides energy security, we can't rely solely on natural gas. We're not building coal plants in the U.S. as much as I think we should. We're going to have, you know, it's a process of elimination. You can't use solar, can't use wind at scale, hydro, you can't build more dams. Natural gas, I'm all for natural gas, but we don't want to be too dependent on single fuel. So what process of elimination, what does that leave us? It leaves us with nuclear.
And having said that, okay, you talk about the focus in the film is specifically on small modular reactors,
right,
or shrinking fission, as opposed to the broader nuclear industry. Okay, talk about that.
Sure. So for nearly the entire history of the nuclear age in terms of commercial power, in terms of the electric grid, what you and I use, the nuclear power plants have been very large, generally on the scale of 1,000 megawatts, 1 gigawatt. And that's what was built at Plant Vogtle in Georgia, Vogtle 3 and 4. Those projects were essentially double the length of time that was expected, double the cost that was expected. But now they're up and running, thank God, right? You know, finally got finished. But those big reactors, as I say in the film, and thank you, I'm pleased to talk about it. It's brand new, just 7.5 minutes. It's a mini, I call it a mini documentary. I worked on it with my daughter, Mary. We just wanted to, you know, offer this mini documentary and say, look at what has happened in the past. We need nuclear, but we need an alternative to the old nuclear blueprints, is how I put it. We need a different design that's going to be built smaller, faster, lighter, denser, cheaper, to use the title of my fifth book, something that we can build and deploy at scale in a way that's faster than the 12 years or so that it cost, that it took to build plants Vogtle 3 and 4. So that's where SMRs come in, small modular reactors, which are generally under 300 megawatts is kind of the agreed scale. So 1 or 2 megawatts, which would be the size of a cat standby gen set that you'd see behind a, you know, a manufacturing plant or, you know, a hotel, up to 300 megawatts, which would be about the size of a large frame turbine, gas turbine. So anyway, that's where the SMR business is coming to the fore. China and Russia are way ahead of the U.S. The U.S. has to catch up, and that's going to take a while. But we're getting the momentum behind it, and I'm very happy about that.
And so the film ends with a powerful point, okay? And so that SMRs could lift billions out of energy poverty, okay? Now it seems like a solution. How significant could small modular reactors be in developing nations that struggle with access to reliable power? And what kind of impact could that actually have globally?
You know, this is the $64 question here, J-Doc, to really mix my metaphors about, you know, let me be clear. The SMRs are going to be deployed first in the developed world because we have the infrastructure, we have the technology, we have the technologists, the workforce to produce them. But think about what they could do in rural Africa if you had that capacity to put them in rural Kenya or Rwanda or rural South Africa, or post them at a mine in, you know, mine mouth power plant. This is what the Russians are doing, by the way, using the same type of reactors they're putting on their own Russian icebreakers. So the potential here is just enormous, and especially for power ships, floating nuclear power plants, which is what Rosatom is doing, the Russian firm. The potential here is just enormous for the developing world because of the incredible power of fission, because there's nothing that comes close to it when it comes to power density, small footprints, the ability to produce large amounts of juice from very small footprints. So I'm hopeful. I'm very sober. I'm hopeful, but sober.
And so when you had a great conversation with the Matt from Allo?
That's right. Yeah, Matt Lozak at Allo Atomics.
Yeah, and so talk about their motto. It seems really compact, a 10-foot by 20-foot module that can power 10,000 homes for 3 years.
Right. Okay.
How revolutionary is that compared with, obviously, you mentioned the older nuclear systems. There needs to be a new plan.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. Yeah. And that was, I live in Austin, Texas. And so, you know, Allo has a factory just between my house and the airport. It's only 5 miles away, you know? So I thought, well, hell, you know, this is easy. I can do a little mini documentary. I don't have to go very far. But their technology is interesting. Their idea is that they're going to build an entire nuclear power plant in 35 pieces, all of which would fit on the back of a flatbed truck that then can be trucked out to, you know, let's say rural New Mexico, or, you know, I'll make something up, in Alaska, at a mine in Alaska, or at a data center in Ohio, or a data center in rural, you know, in rural Illinois, you name it. But this has been the dream for years. And I've written about this SMR since 2008, J-Doc. I'm not new to this. I've heard the hype forever. But they're actually, what's interesting about Allo is, I've been in a few factories. They're building. They're actually fabricating the damn things right there. So that is a major step forward.
You didn't hear me and Krause talking about it 2 weeks ago, and all of a sudden you just had to get, you know, I thought that's how you heard it.
I'm an old guy now. I'm not as old as you, J-Doc. No one is, but I'm, you know, I turned 65.
I just look great for my age.
You don't look a day over 87, really. Right. It's just amazing. You're taking care of yourself. I'm proud of you.
I'm going to show you just so you understand, it's really important. You see that thing behind me?
That's
Mill. I'm just talking about electricity. Yeah, we don't have any electricity powered to that. So it looks good in our conversation. But you talk about their model, okay? And in a sense, Ben, you can put it on the back. It can be shipped on a standard flatbed truck, okay?
Yeah.
It changes the economics and the logistics of the deployment. How realistic is that idea of a factory built, in a sense, factory built nuclear plant assembling modules like almost Lego pieces at the site. What hurdles stand in the way of that? Because you can see if that's possible, the potential is unprecedented.
Yeah. Well, you're right. I mean, the potential is enormous, but as my father used to say, a lot of slips between the cup and the lip. So, you know, what are the key hurdles? It's regulations, it's capital, and it's fuel. So let's take the last one, the fuel part of this. Right now, roughly a quarter of all the nuclear power plants in the U.S. are using fuel that's produced by the Russians. So we, you know, the Russians are not our friends. We have, you know, clearly understand that. Remember, Mitt Romney said that about 10 years ago, and he was laughed out of the room, right? Well, he turned out to be pretty on target there. So regulations, capital, and fuel. Regulation, this is a problem with the NRC, getting them to approve anything, getting them, you know, to move on these issues. We've only had one SMR design that has been approved for deployment, and that's the NuScale reactor. NuScale is publicly traded, so is Oklo. And then the capital, if we can solve the regulatory problem, the capital will follow. But the amount of capital that's going to be required is just staggering, JDoc. We're talking tens, hundreds of billions of dollars to make this happen. So I don't take any of these lightly. So, you know, as I said at the end of Shrinking Fission, I've watched this for almost 20 years now. Show me. You know, we have to quit talking and start building these damn things.
Matt said, you know, that when you listen to the documentary, okay, Matt from Allo, Atomics.
Allo Atomics, yeah.
Allo Atomics. They were able to raise $130 million. Obviously, there was a lot of people on board that normally are not, you know, that easily sold.
Sure.
So talk about that. And in a sense, I mean, the vision's out there, okay? But, you know, there's a lot of hurdles to go.
Sure. Well, yes, all of those things are true. And just briefly, so where can you see Shrinking Fission? On my Substack, robertbryce.substack.com. It's free. You can also find it on my YouTube channel, which is at Robert Bryce on YouTube. But yes, Lozak pointed out that they've raised $130 million, and this is for a company with no revenue, right? Oklo is publicly traded. I haven't checked it today, but to give you an idea of the excitement that these ideas around SMRs have created, I think Oklo's market capitalization today is something like 12 or maybe $15 billion. I mean, these are cartoonish numbers. Now the market cap here today, JDoc, is $19.8 billion. This is for a company that doesn't make any money. Right. And they still have not built a reactor. NuScale, the same. NuScale trades under the ticker SMR. Let me just look while we're talking. Yeah, it has a market cap of $11.5 billion. And last year they lost $300 or $400 million. So there is a lot of investor enthusiasm for these ideas. But again, what's going to be the chemistry? Is it going to be light water? Is it going to be molten salt? Is it going to be gas cooled? Two of the companies that I would not bet against are GE Vernova, which was spun off from GE, the big industrial conglomerate. They have a lot of experience in building nuclear reactors. And the other is BWX Technologies, formerly known as Babcock & Wilcox, an old line industrial company that has been building reactors for the U.S. Navy for decades. So those are the other companies that are in the running here too. So the competition is fierce, and who's going to win? I wish I knew.
We've had them on the program, by the way.
Oh, you have?
Yes. And it's been some time, but when you talk,
who was that? Was it GE or BWXT?
Babcock & Wilcox. They work with the Boilermakers Union.
Yeah,
a lot.
Right.
So, And I forget exactly the topic. I'd have to look at the industry, the interview. But it was a pretty fascinating conversation. It wasn't on this topic. But let me ask you, how do these small modular reactors, how do they impact and kind of coordinate with AI and the data centers?
Sure. Well, so we talked earlier about gas demand and how the hyperscalers, as they're known in the industry, Meta and Microsoft, Google and Amazon, or Alphabet and Amazon, they're clearly pushing hard to get as much gas and gas fired capacity as they can. But they're also looking forward, and I think it's just very simple, JDoc. Their strategy is, we're hedging our bets. right? We know nuclear is zero carbon. We're going to ignore the Sierra Clubbers and the rest of the nuts from the left, the NGOs and NRDCs, the Environmental Defense Fund crowd, you know, the anti-nuclear clack, and say, well, we don't want to listen to you anymore. We need power. And we know we can get reliable baseload, low carbon juice from nuclear power plants. So that's why you see Microsoft doing the deal on Three Mile Island, Amazon doing the deal on Susquehanna there in PA. This is just, I think, again, simply more rationality coming into the power sector where power is meeting AI, right? And computing power has always depended on large amounts of electricity. When ENIAC was the first general purpose computer, when it was switched on in Philly in the 40s, it dimmed the lights throughout a large part of the city. It drew so much power. So this is the history of the computing age, but it's always gotten smaller, faster, lighter, denser, cheaper. These machines have gotten better and better, but now it's a paradigm shift. And so big tech is just looking at nuclear as a logical way forward, and well, they should.
And you had mentioned, obviously, from a layman's point of view, it seems like it's a compact opportunity. It's much more economical, okay? It doesn't pose a lot of the issues that the big plants, a big massive nuclear plant would pose, which if you look at wind farms, and you and I have talked about that, is minuscule compared to that. And so, there seems to be a model that, almost a mobile model that's much more economical. And what's the pushback here?
Well, let me just make a quick point about what you just follow up on it, rather, which is that the footprint is key, right? That, you know, I've written about and reported on many, 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 many times the land use conflicts over wind and solar. And they're raging there in Pennsylvania. They're raging all across the East Coast, raging all around the world. In fact, 45 rejections of wind or solar in England, Ireland, and Scotland just since the first of this year. So, you know, the fundamental problem with wind and solar is they take too much land. Nuclear, it requires 2,000 times less land than wind, 200 times less than solar. And you can build the plants close to where the power demand is. So you don't need high voltage transmission, which is another land use issue. So this is the key. You need to build the power plant close to the power need. And this is one of the other reasons why nuclear is so important, and arguably the same for natural gas. You see the data centers are going to be built right at Homer City, right next to the power plant. So it makes a lot of sense. You know, there, you put the demand close to where the power plant is and vice versa.
So companies like Amazon, Meta, Microsoft, and Google obviously invest in billions in nuclear. Are any serious about SMRs? Talk about that if you would.
Yeah, all of them have put money into SMR companies to varying degrees, and it's not just big tech. Remember Dow Chemical? They now this is an agreement that's about 2 years old by now, I think. They put money into a company called X Energy that is planning to build high temperature gas reactors in Seadrift, Texas, at the Dow plant there. So Dow is saying, we need process heat, we need power, we like this design. Is gas cooled the technology that's going to win? We'll see. But it's not just big tech that is looking at SMRs as a possible solution for what they need. One other quick point on this is that Rosatom has built a nuclear power ship, and it's already been deployed in Siberia in PVEC in Chukotka. And now they're building more floating nuclear power plants that are going to be in 2027 or 2028, posted at the Bamskaya copper mine in Chukotka to provide power to that copper mine. So, you know, this is happening across industries. It's not just big tech.
So we only have a couple minutes left.
Sure.
I want to talk about the global race here. Okay.
Yeah.
You point out Russia's already has a shipborne SMR. China has built one in Shandong. Who are the real global leaders here? And I assume it's them. But yeah. Can the U.S. realistically catch up?
Well, last question first. Yes, of course we can. But it's going to require, and this is the key, J-Doc, is going to require bipartisan support from Congress and decadal support, not just, you know, we agree this biennium, right? We agree until the next midterm. No, damn it. We've got to think long-term, decadal support that says we believe nuclear is important for a whole lot of reasons. Yes, CO2. Okay, fine. But it's about grid security. It's about energy security. It's about AI. But it's also about technological superiority and technological leadership. And right now we are far behind Russia and China when it comes to that. And that's because the governments in those countries are looking at nuclear and seeing it as a national security imperative. And we have to do the same.
And from an emission standpoint, okay, talking about clean energy, take 15 seconds to talk about, you know, like the form of clean energy we're talking about.
There's no way forward to reduce emissions that doesn't include a large slug of nuclear power.
There you go. Robert, if you would, one more time, how can people find the documentary and, of course, the website, if you would give that address?
Sure. Thank you. Yes. You can see my new documentary, mini documentary, 7.5 minutes. My daughter, Mary, shot and produced it. It's on my YouTube channel, Robert Bryce. It's also on my Substack, robertbryce.substack.com.
Awesome. Well, I want to thank Robert Bryce, acclaimed author, film producer, and journalist, an energy expert, a supreme, for being our guest on the broadcast. Robert, thanks so much for another great show.
Always a pleasure, J-Doc.
It's my pleasure. We're going to have more from the Labor and Energy Show.
The Eastern Atlantic States Regional Council of Carpenters is proud to present skilled union workers, including the workers that build and maintain our energy infrastructure. The safest, best trained, and most productive carpenters in the country are on the job. Whether it's energy from nuclear, wind, coal, natural gas, or offshore wind, the EAS carpenters are ready to provide the construction need of an energy industry our families depend on. If you're interested in a job in construction, visit EASCarpenters.org or follow us on social at EASCarpenters.
This edition of the Labor and Energy Show is proudly presented and sponsored by PBF Energy, Monroe Energy, National Mining Association, and the United Steelworkers.
Consider a career with the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers. As a Boilermaker apprentice, you'll earn while you learn. We offer excellent wages and benefits, and as part of our no-cost, hands-on apprenticeship program, you'll learn from the best in state-of-the-art training centers and on the job. Become a union Boilermaker and get on your way to a great career.
Visit Boilermakers.org or call 844-IBB-WELD.
This program is paid for by the Labor and Energy Alliance. Today's program has been pre-recorded. Portions of tonight's Labor and Energy special are presented by PBF Energy and supported by members of the labor union community, a collaborative to educate the public and change the narrative.
And back here on the Labor and Energy Show with J-Doc, what a great conversation, J-Doc, today with Robert Bryce. There's so much information in there that can be extracted into individual pieces of content to help educate the public. Well done by you, and a special thanks to Robert Bryce.
Joe, I mean, you know, this is the AI data center. This is the age of AI, okay? And the solution, small modular reactors. We talk about common sense and energy, okay? Great solutions, clean energy, okay? And opportunities to stay as a leader in the space, a global leader. And of course, Robert Bryce's new mini documentary, Shrinking Fish, and the race to build small modular reactors, which really, I mean, really cool. It's like a mobile, nuclear reactor. Okay. And obviously, it's not just here in the United States, it's global. We're in that race, and there's a ton of potential there. And of course, nobody kind of explains it better than Robert Bryce, who's a foremost expert on it. And so couldn't thank him enough for being on the program again.
I do look forward to watching his documentary shot and produced by his daughter, which I'm excited to watch. As you know, a lot of my kids are involved in content creation and media. So that was exciting to hear, and I look forward to that. Last 35 seconds, J-Doc, I'll give it all to you.
On that point, very well done. And, you know, it's so awesome to get the opportunity, to discuss, how we're going to power this new age. You heard him talk about union labor and the need for union labor, and of course, being able to keep up with the technology. As you know, Joe, our labor unions are loading up with education and being prepared for the age of AI, which is upon us. But advocacy-wise, it's also incredibly important, too. Our labor unions are able to and want to get involved on that stage to make sure that we don't take anything for granted. We're prepared to do the work. And, of course, we're prepared to advocate for the work as well.
That's going to do it for this edition of the Labor and Energy Show with Jaydock and Krause. See you next time, everyone. The Labor and Energy Alliance would like to thank the following organizations for your generosity and support. Together, we are educating listeners and changing the narrative, one broadcast at a time. The American Fuel and Petrochemical Manufacturers, PBF Energy, Monroe Energy, Steam Fitters Local 420, EQT Corporation, Marcellus Shale Coalition, the Eastern Atlantic States Regional Council of Carpenters, United Steelworkers, National Mining Association, and the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers.
This program is paid for by the Labor and Energy Alliance. All opinions or statements expressed on the program are solely those of Labor and Energy Alliance or their guests and do not reflect the opinions of WPHT or Odyssey. Today's program has been pre-recorded.
First chartered in 1903, Steamfitters Local 420 has been constructing and installing mechanical systems throughout the Delaware Valley for over a century. United by excellence, this local is proud to have worked on projects such as the Sun Oil Refineries, Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, and the stadiums for all our Philly teams. From helmets to hard hats, Local 420 represents the history of Philadelphia. Steamfitters Local 420. Jim Snell, business manager.
So you want to start a business. You might think you need a team of people and fancy tech skills, but you don't. You just need GoDaddy Aero. I'm Walton Goggins, and as an actor, I'm an expert in looking like I know what I'm doing, even when I don't. And I like the sound of starting my own business, Walton Goggins Goggle Glasses. But I'm an actor. I don't know what I'm doing. I needed help. GoDaddy Aero uses AI to create everything you need to grow a business. It'll make you a unique logo. It'll create a custom website. It'll write social posts for you and even set you up with a social media calendar. I didn't even realize I needed a social media calendar. GoDaddy Aero will take your idea that sounds good and make a business that looks like you know what you're doing. GoDaddy Aero can get your business up and running in minutes. You know what that sounds like? It sounds like a plan. Get started at GoDaddy.com/Aero. That's GoDaddy.com/AIRO.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show. We bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.